Major support for Out to Lunch is provided by the law firm of Jones Walker, established in 1937 with over 375 attorneys in offices throughout the U.S., providing a comprehensive range of services to a local, national, and international client base. JonesWalker.com. And by Shorten Associates, legal recruiters in Louisiana and Texas. And by Wyndham Garden Lafayette.
From Chopsticks Restaurant in Lafayette, we're out to lunch with Christian Mader, publisher and editor of The Current. It's business, Acadiana style.
Hi, I'm Christian Mader. Welcome to Out to Lunch. Running a startup in any industry is building a plane in midair. You might think you know how to fly, but then you hit turbulence, or you figure out that you need to also know how to sell plane tickets. These days, it's not enough to know the work. You've got to know how to sell it. And when you're an entrepreneur, that means selling yourself, more often than not on social media. My guests today have both taken the plunge into startup life in their own ways. What they have in common is that they both sell whimsy and imagination. In most cases, they have to sell it themselves. Denise Gallagher got her start in advertising, working for 15 years as the senior art director at BBR, a well-established local ad and marketing firm. She bet on herself and left the company in 2013, pursuing a second act as an illustrator for hire and a children's book author. Her most recent book, Peg Bearskin, A Traditional Newfoundland Tale, was published earlier this year. Denise, thanks, and welcome to Out to Lunch.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Okay, Mandy Osgood. My mom always told me you eat with your eyes first, and your business, Gray's Acadiana, seems to take that advice to heart. Gray's Acadiana hit the streets in April of this year, importing the Gray's craze from the other side of the world, New Zealand and Australia. Gray's Acadiana creates custom, seasonal sharing platters for social gathering, corporate thank yous, or maybe even an evening at home with a big appetite. It's food that makes you feel good, and the designs are beyond appetizing. Mandy, welcome to Out to Lunch.
Thank you so much.
So, Denise, that's a big leap to come out of a steady job,
yes.
Right?
And it's a big, scary leap.
It's a big, scary leap, particularly in book publishing. And I don't know that a lot of people would think of Lafayette as a great place to start a publishing career. What was that transition like?
I actually started with an eye toward illustrating more, or doing more illustration and more boutique-style graphic design. The agency I was working for was moving more towards social media and, you know, just bigger websites and things like that. And I actually had grown to a point where I had done a lot and accomplished a lot at the ad agency. And I wanted to see, I had more in me to give, more creative. And so it really was not a decision to jump right into children's book author and illustrator, but more seeing what I could do with my creativity, where my creativity would take me, knowing that I had more inside of me. I started doing more graphic design, getting more illustration projects, and I didn't leave the agency, you know, just without a net. I had started doing illustration projects while still working at the agency, and it just, my clientele kind of grew out of that, and my urge to, you know, create more illustrations and do more illustrative style design grew from there. But then I had always wanted to be a children's author and illustrator, so I joined the Society of Children's Book Writers and Illustrators, started attending conferences in Houston and New Orleans, and then my career in writing and for children and illustrating for children kind of grew from that. So it was a path, basically. It wasn't so much a leap as a path.
Yeah, still, I mean, it takes a lot of courage, right, to leave steady work, especially when you have a family, and then go into sort of an unknown. But it doesn't sound like it was unknown for you, in other words. But certainly you got to a stage where you said, well, this is the thing I've always wanted to do.
Yes.
I mean, is that right with
yes.
respect to the children's books?
I had learned a lot about marketing and, you know, working in advertising for 20 years, you learn a lot about how to run a business. And I could never have done this straight out of school. I had learned so much from working with some very creative people and working with the most creative people in Lafayette. And so I used the knowledge that I gained as far as with marketing and with being creative, with meeting with clients, how to take care of business. You know, I never would have been able to do that. But yes, my mother was a kindergarten teacher, and she had a great library of picture books that I actually have my copy that she, one of her copies that she had in her classroom that was my favorite book.
What was that?
And it was a version of The Sorcerer's Apprentice, illustrated by Tomi Unger, who is a very famous illustrator. And I have it. It made it through the flood. Our house flooded in the big flood, but it made it through the flood, and it's kind of tattered. I love the book so much. It's filled with eyeballs and octopus tentacles and, you know, just weird things hidden in corners, and it just spoke to me, and I wanted to live in that book. So I wanted to create things for children that, you know, where they would feel the same way, a world that where they could escape to, or a world that just enchanted them. And so I wanted to do that also.
Mandy, it seems like a business like yours is not necessarily something that you would just sort of pick up and do, right? I mean, obviously it's not a restaurant, but it kind of made me think of a restaurant. You know, you couldn't just say, I'm going to go start a restaurant, right? So, you know, there have got to be startup costs. There have got to be, you know, things you got to think through. I mean, how did you actually go from just like the concept to saying, all right, we're gonna make this work? How did you get Grays out there?
So my mom and I, we have been entertaining just like for fun, birthday parties and Christmases and all that sort of thing for years. And it's just what we enjoy doing. And so we started making these kind of like elaborate tablescapes before we knew it was called a grazing table. Like, you know, that kind of thing. Just really fun, entertaining with food kind of stuff. And so we had come across in Australia and New Zealand and over there how they were taking this entertaining and like entertaining with food in that way, and they were kind of like boxing it up in like boxes and platters, and they were selling them that way, and we're like, that's so cool to get something that normally seems like something for like a large special event, but actually for every day. And so we were like, that is such a cool concept. And so we for sure were like, someone's gonna be doing it here. Like, it's such a neat concept. And we researched and we couldn't find anybody doing it. So my mom, Tracy, she's my co-owner of Grays, and she is very business-minded, entrepreneurial spirit at heart, and I am more the creative side. So I like was telling her this idea, and I'm like, that's something I could get on board with. And she's like, let's do it. So we started research. It took us, it sounds silly to say, but even like, you know, like 2 months finding the right packaging that we wanted. Like, we used like eco-friendly packaging and like palm leaf trays and that sort of thing, like biodegradable. And so we just started with, I mean, so much research and so much product testing. And we met with, you know, local vendors, because we really did want to try to source as much as we can locally and support other small businesses. And so that was kind of like our startup, just months of behind the scenes, really working so hard to get everything just right and make it to where we would be able to sell it to other people, and that it would be something beautiful and enjoyable for them. Did that answer your question?
No. Oh, absolutely. I mean, well, and more than anything else, I love the word elaborate tablescape. I was looking for what to call it, because charcuterie didn't quite seem right. So, I mean, can you tell me what's on the plate? I mean, especially given, like, this was something you were doing for your family.
Yeah.
So once you bring it to market, I'm sure it looks different. So what is
it? Yeah. Okay, so, well, and I would say that even more now in the United States, like, grazing tables, people are starting to, like, that term means more to them now than it would have, you know, 2 years ago. So people kind of understand that that is just an... A lot, like, we have everything from, okay, let's see, there's charcuterie meats and, of course, all the amazing cheeses. So that's kind of like, for me, whenever I'm building them, that's my base. Like, that's always where I start. That's the main thing. And then we have, like, special dark chocolates and crackers and crisp, and then all your, like, locally sourced fruits and vegetables. And so, like, even on... especially really big tables, those are even more fun because you can add in lots of other ingredients that you wouldn't normally see in like a smaller box, but still, like, nuts and from almonds and pecans, and we have some praline pecans that are amazing from up the road. Just figs, like a lot of seasonal stuff. Like that, I really do try to go like farm to the farmer's market and find things that are in season.
Man, that sounds delicious. So, Denise, something that struck me in thinking about your work as a published writer, right, is that you kind of have to market what you do twice, like once perhaps to like a publisher and then also to the audience. I mean, how do you conceptualize what you're doing? Are you just telling stories that you're passionate about? Or are you having to think through, okay, well, I imagine publishers are going to be attracted to this book, and then I know I can get people to read it?
Not at all. I really want, my goal is to do, is to write something that I would want to read to my child. As you know, I've gone to conferences and learned a lot, and you really do have to keep an eye on the market and what's, you know, what's selling and what's popular. But gosh, I really just love folk tales and fairy tales and things that are just deep and meaningful and, you know, have a little bit of darkness or you know, to it. And that's not always what's popular. And my illustration style has been called too European, which I don't take as a, you know, not a compliment. You know, I actually was recently awarded an award from a Russian, in a Russian competition for illustration for children's books. So I was like, well, you know, that's good. You know, I could be, you know, throughout the world. That's fine. But I try to keep true to what makes my heart beat fastest. You know, like, what do I want to read? What do I love to read? And then there are markets for that too. You know, so, but I don't specifically write just for the money, which my husband would be not happy for me to say that, but, you know, it's not about the money. It's about, you know, the passion and the love that I feel for literature and art, and that's what children's books are. I mean, they're your first glimpse as a child into art and, you know, art and the world around you. So, you know, why wouldn't I want to be part of that for any child? You know, so yeah.
What does it mean for an illustration to be too European? I gotta know what that means.
I guess it's maybe too much detail, or, you know, like I get a little too, I love patterns and things like that and foliage and, you know, so maybe that's it. I haven't quite figured that out yet, but I did send some illustrations to Bologna, so maybe they'll get into that market over there. So, you know, that, and then I have an agent in New York who she was trying to sell a picture book concept that I've, you know, for me, and she has also moved to trying to sell its market, her European market. So, which would be fine with me. You know, maybe I could go visit France, or, you know.
Sounds like a good
deal.
I could
go with you.
Yeah, exactly. We could go together. We could go look at cheeses.
And
I would be fine with there that. Dark chocolate and cheese and some good bread. Yes.
So, Mandy, when you were describing your platters, I mean, your face lit up when you talked about fancy cheeses and we were fancy. Speaking of things that are too European, I mean, is that your favorite part of putting a plate together? Is it the cheese? I imagine it's a lot of stuff, but I mean, is cheese a passion of yours?
So, if I'm being completely honest, the passion of mine is like making it beautiful, where, because I mean, there's amazing food that does not look pretty. I mean, if we're being honest. So I love to make it beautiful where, like, it's a statement piece for people, not just the food. The food is amazing. Of course, that's, you know, wonderful. But I would say, really, my passion is the creative part. Like, I get to take these different things that on their own aren't really that attractive. I mean, they're okay, you know. Some of them are pretty. But once I get to, like, piece them together, and it sounds so silly, but I do, like, I look at, like, every single raspberry, make sure, like, okay, this raspberry looks good, you know. And I put it exactly where I want it. And, you know, I always tell people, like, be careful. Don't set it in your back seat. Please set it on the floorboard, because Lafayette traffic, if you hit your brakes, it's done. but, no, it really is. It's like art for me. It's, like, building it and putting it together. And like, my final touch is always I put rosemary on it, and, like, I just kind of, like, look at my little baby that's, you know, complete, and then wrap it up. And so, really, that's the fun part for me. I like to, of course, eat the cheeses, you know, and that's always great. But really, it's the just making it beautiful. And, like, when people get it, they just are so excited. I mean, and that's why they want it. Like, they could go buy meat and cheese somewhere at a grocery store or something, and they always say, like, I like to put together my own charcuterie boards, but this is so beautiful. Like, it's amazing. And so that's kind of the real passion for me is the art of it, I think.
How do you decide which raspberry is, like, the best-looking raspberry? What do you look for in the quality of a beautiful raspberry?
Well, some of them, just their coloring is really off. So, I mean, I just like it to be bright and pretty. But also some of them are really too mushy to, like, then I feel comfortable putting them on a tray. I mean, we don't waste them. We don't throw them away. We, you know, I usually freeze them and put them in smoothies later. But, so the less desirable fruit does not go wasted, but it just doesn't make it on the trays. So,
yeah. I want to say I was lucky enough to see a 14-foot work of your art at an event, and it was amazing.
Thank
it was
you.
Like walking through a forest and discovering, you know, little bits of cheeses, and there was a pomegranate that was beautiful, and there was chocolate and nuts and honey with the honeycomb. It was really like an experience, and it was art. It was really beautiful. I took pictures, so
I didn't even know you at the time.
So it was beautiful.
That's what we do. Like, that's what we hope is that people bring this home, and even on date night, like, it's an experience. It's a conversation starter. Like, it's let me see if this pairs well with this, like that sort of thing. So it's super fun. That was at the Acadiana Symphony. We did a 14-foot grazing table, and so all the fun stuff got to come out. And so, and people did, they said, like, it's a little treasure hunt. And I was like, oh, that's fun. Like, you know, like, someone was looking for, oh, where'd you get that apricot? You know, someone's
yes.
like, oh, down at that end. Like, it's just fun.
You're listening to Out to Lunch. I'm Christian Mader. I'm talking with illustrator, designer, and children's book author Denise Gallagher and Mandy Osgood, co-owner of Graze. Denise and Mandy, this is the part of the show we call the interview. When you own or run a business, you inevitably have to hire people. When you do, you only have a limited amount of conversation with a potential hire to decide if this person is going to be a good fit for you and your company. And lately, there's been an interesting trend in the job interview where instead of asking the basic job-related questions, employees ask job applicants questions that go beyond their resume and test their ability to think through a problem. So I have a list of 16 of these probing interview questions in front of me. I'm going to ask each of you to pick a number between 1 and 16. I'll then ask you the question that corresponds to that number, and I want you to tell me two things: how you'd answer it, and two, if you asked this in an interview, what do you think someone's answer would tell you about them? So, Denise, I'd like you to go first. Could you pick a number between 1 and 16?
9.
9. If I assembled 3 of your former supervisors in a room and asked them about you, what would they say about you that is not true?
That's not true. I am a dreamer, but as I'm dreaming, it may seem like I'm not working, but my mind is always working. So, you know, those are definitely two things that, you know, they don't sound untrue. There are layers. I'm complicated.
That's okay. You're human. You're allowed to be complicated.
Okay, thanks.
So what would that question, or I guess the answer to that question, tell you as an employer? So what would you glean about somebody from that?
How you answer the question, I think, tells a lot about a person. Whether you're being honest, how you see yourself, how you think others see you, you know, how you're perceived by others. It's really a difficult question to answer because in an interview, you don't want to say anything negative about yourself, but you want to be honest. So that's a really tricky question.
Yeah.
So
yeah, I mean, they would figure it out eventually, right?
Yes.
So Mandy, what's your number?
Let's try 13.
13. Okay. If you were on an island, could only bring 3 things, what would you bring?
A container for water. Oh, water filter. Here we go.
That two things.
Oh, no. Let's make it a filtered water bottle.
Okay.
Okay.
We'll call
because
that one thing.
I'm on an island and I would need to live. What else? A knife, because that seems very practical for shelter and food. What would be the third? Sunscreen.
You're so practical. I'm like going books and my dog maybe a pencil.
I think I could explore nature. I think that would entertain me enough. And I guess if I had a knife, I could make something. I don't know. That would be entertaining. So it's funny. We just we did interviews last week. We just hired our first employees. And so we didn't ask that question, but we did, of course, Google some good interview questions. So it's funny to be in this seat now answering interview questions. So
what was what questions did you ask?
Oh, I wish I could remember. I do remember that I did ask a situation where they've been like flustered at their job or, you know, like kind of in a panic and how they handled that situation. Because I just think that's good to know. Like, you know, do you shut down? Do you, I don't know, get angry or move forward? So I just liked to know how they were going to react. You know, people come in a lot, and because it's a new concept at Gray's, they just ask a lot of questions, and they ask a lot of things that we're not able to do. And so no one has been upset. But I do know the day will come where someone's, you know, needs will not be met like they probably need. Like, a lot of people have asked if we vacuum seal our stuff and ship it, like that kind of thing, you know. So I anticipate there will be.
Yeah, so I mean, what are some things that people ask other than, it sounds like people, that's great that you have demand, people want you to ship it. But like, what are some things
it's wonderful.
You can't meet that need?
So they, and this is a need that, sure, it could be met. It just wouldn't be the same thing that we're doing. So they want to basically, like, build a box. So they want to customize everything in it. And, you know, we do allow, like, you know, if you would love strawberry instead of blackberry jam, of course I'm going to do that for you. Or if you hate blue cheese, you know, like, of course I'm going to meet those requests. But I really, like, we want to leave space for us to make it beautiful like we want to make it. And also, because we do locally source a lot of things, like, we want it to be the freshest, best quality ingredients that we have possible. And we know what we have. So, you know, if everyone one day is like, I want no fruit, you know, then it just doesn't allow us to meet the needs of, like, our vendors and ourselves and our customers. So we kind of leave the creative liberty up to us, and then, you know, trying to meet needs as we can.
So, Denise, something you said earlier that I found pretty interesting was that, you know, part of what you perceived to be happening in the ad world, right, was moving towards digital marketing and social media marketing, but the, you know, the children's book industry, right, maybe that's in a different place. I mean, so you're, I'm curious, like, what the sort of the vehicle is these days. Like, do people still just want to read paper books? Do they want to read it on a Kindle? I mean, how are you designing your work consumption-wise?
People do, read on the go, you know, a lot, you know, on Kindle. And I personally prefer paper, you know, and books that are physical that I can hold in my hand. And then I think as far as children's books, nothing beats, sitting in bed with your little ones around you, you know, reading, you know, together a picture book and turning the pages and seeing what happens next and talking about it and going at your own pace. So I don't think children's books are going away. In fact, I think there's a lot of care taken into the production of children's books because, it is a market that, you know, new families, you know, are still wanting to, you know, inspire their children and educate their children and keep their children close. And with children's books, you can do that. You know, I have a 25-year-old, a 13-year-old, and a 7-year-old granddaughter. And so one of my favorite things is story time, you know, at bedtime. And, you know, I still force my 13-year-old to listen to me read. He doesn't mind. He says, you know, he says he does, but, you know, I catch him smiling and listening as I read The House with Chicken Legs and, you know, things like that. And right now we just started the Flowers for Algernon because he read it in school and he thought that I would like it. So he wanted to share it with me. So, you know, it's things like that, that, you know, like, what
else?
Yeah,
I think adults maybe go into more audio and Kindles and stuff, but, like, I have three small children, and they will every single time reach for a physical book in their hands.
Like,
and they have the little tablets with the little books they could flip through, but they every single time
there's something
choose
because
a book.
you can sit there with a book and there's the smell of
and
the
kids
ink
like
of
they're so visual and so they want to see and they want to feel and yeah. I don't think children's books are probably going anywhere. Grown up or adult books maybe. Grown ups.
Making beautiful things is hard work. It's even harder if you make it look effortless. And there are plenty of great tools out there to grow your idea into great business, but it takes persistence and savvy and creativity to actually make anything of it. Denise and Mandy, I'm super thrilled for the both of you, and I'm impressed by what you've accomplished out there on your own. Thanks so much for joining me on Out to Lunch.
Thank you so
Thanks for
much,
having us, Christian. Yes.
My guests on Out to Lunch this week have been illustrator and children's book author Denise Gallagher and Mandy Osgood, co-owner of Gray's Acadiana. You can find Denise's books and Mandy's seasonal boards at itsacadiana.com. The producer of our show is Grant Morris. Our technical producer is Eric Morrell. Our researcher is Ann Christian. And today's show was engineered by Blake Longley. You can listen to this show and to past episodes of Out to Lunch wherever you get your podcasts, including Spotify. And you can find all of our podcasts at itsacadiana.com. If you want to know what we look like, you can find photos from this show on itsacadiana.com, our It's Acadiana Facebook page, and on Instagram at Out to Lunch Acadiana. Out to Lunch is a production of INO Broadcasting for itsacadiana.com and KRVS 88.7 FM. I'm Christian Mader, editor of The Current, Lafayette's community-owned nonprofit newsroom. Thanks for joining me. For more great stories and conversation, check out thecurrentla.com and sign up for our weekly newsletter. I'll see you back here next week around the lunch table for more business Acadiana style on Out to Lunch. Bye-bye.
Out to Lunch is recorded live at Chopsticks Restaurant in Lafayette, where East meets Southwest. Authentic Chinese cuisine prepared with fresh local ingredients. The Out to Lunch Acadiana theme music, Encore Monsieur Nice Guy, is written by Mitchell Foreman and performed by Mitchell Foreman and Andre Michaud. Major support for Out to Lunch is provided by the law firm of Jones Walker, established in 1937 with over 375 attorneys in offices throughout the U.S., providing a comprehensive range of services to a local, national, and international client base. JonesWalker.com. And by Shorten Associates, legal recruiters in Louisiana and Texas. Support for Out to Lunch Acadiana comes from the Wyndham Garden Lafayette, located off Pinhook near Cali's Saloon. Wyndham Garden Lafayette is a pet and family-friendly hotel with reception space for large and intimate events, free parking, free Wi-Fi, and a free shuttle within 3 miles that includes the airport and downtown restaurants.
For 2 hours of true word sound power, classic heavyweight Rasta reggae radio, it's Jamon here on KRVS. Cecil here, chairing the Churchill Gathering every Sunday night from 9 to 11 or Saturday mornings 1 to 3 a.m. Heavyweight sound and lifted spirits guaranteed. Jamon here on KRVS, Lafayette Lake Charles.
This is John Broussard, better known as JB.
And Melvin Caesar, better known as MC. And we want you to join us each week for the Zydeco et Passale program for the best in Creole and Zydeco music in the area and even in the world.
Zydeco et Passale, coming up Saturday morning at 8, right here on KRVS.
We all make mistakes in life. Si tu avais manqué la dernière Franco Mix, c'est OK. Tu peux m'écouter this Thursday at 9 p.m. seulement sur KRVS 88.7 avec Drake Benoit LeBlanc. Et c'est formidable.
So check it. 11 attractive, beautiful young people set sail across the Atlantic Ocean on a raft. What could possibly go wrong? On the next Snap Judgment, Raft of Passion. Snap Judgment, storytelling with the beat, cinema of sound.
Do not miss it.
Coming up tonight at 10 on KRVS.
You're listening to KRVS 88.7 FM, Lafayette, Lake Charles, and on the web at krvs.org. Find us on Facebook at KRVS Public Media.